Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, the road trip is over.
Finally.
The 49ers beat the Saints.
How about that?
It's been a pretty good week.
Good week for Bay Area sports, that's for sure.
Yeah, this whole Niners business is awfully reminiscent of the Giants from two seasons ago, where a team that kind of had no business making a run all the way to the end and then winning it all.
Right.
I don't want to take anything away from the 49ers. Great defense, and they're figuring it out on offense, but no one thought they would ever be anywhere close to being in this situation, right?
Right. And it's pretty amazing. You see Niners fever everywhere around here. I haven't followed the Niners very closely in a long time. I certainly was a fan during the Montana and Young eras, and then after they shellacked the San Diego Chargers in 94, which I remember very clearly.
Yes.
I haven't paid that much attention since the Sharks fever has ramped up. And so it's nice to see the Sharks, I mean, not the Sharks, the 49ers are respectable once again. And maybe next week I might actually consider watching the game.
I wish you had watched last week, because
I heard
the game on Saturday. If you have a chance, if they have a replay of it or whatever, dude, the last, just watch the last 5 minutes.
I listened actually to it on the radio. I was doing some stuff and I was listening to it on the radio. So I got to hear the announcers go crazy, which is, it might actually be more fun because, you know, they have the home announcers.
Right.
Just like in the playoffs, you hear Dan Rusinowski and Jamie Baker, but Randy Hahn and Drew Amenda probably won't be announcing the games once, if they get to the conference finals, say, or the Stanley Cup finals. So it was actually kind of cool to hear the 49ers regular announcers' voices that even now I recognize, getting all excited about the Niners coming back, Vernon Davis scoring with 9 seconds left, etc.
Yeah. There's two reasons why I started with the 49ers today. Is one, I love the mentality of the team and the coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping maybe some of that Bay Area fever is going to rub off on San Jose. Just the confidence and the stones, just the pure stones at the end of the game, where you love seeing the fact that they just weren't going to kick the field goal. They shoved it down their throat. And we saw that from the Sharks on this road trip, that when they needed to score goals, they could do it, and they could do it within seconds of each other. You know, we saw that in Minnesota, and we saw it in the second period against Chicago. You know, they were able to score pretty quickly and be very effective in stretches, but it's, again, that consistency issue for the Sharks. You know, I'm not trying to poo-poo too much of a 2-1-1 road trip, but there was a little bit of disappointment mixed in. But the second thing I want to talk about quickly before we get into the road trip specifically is, we're talking about unlikely teams. Right now in the NHL, who is this team? Who is this team to you that is the one that at the beginning of the year just completely, they have no shot at making a run all the way to the end? And now you've got to believe the 49ers are going to be in the Super Bowl. I mean, like, you've got to think they've got an outstanding shot of making it. And then if they get there, they could actually win. I mean, they could win. So who's that team in the NHL right now? No shot at the beginning of the year. And now you could see them being this team.
The Canadiens? Oh, wait, no. No. Right now, I'd have to say it's probably Ottawa might be that team. They're currently fifth in the East.
Yeah, you think Ottawa really has a legitimate shot of going to the Stanley Cup Finals?
No, but are you driving towards St. Louis here?
Yes.
Because St. Louis would be the other choice. Because Ken Hitchcock turns the team around, as he always seems to do. St. Louis is now fourth in the West with 58 points. They have 3 more points than San Jose, but San Jose has 2 games in hand.
It's similar to the Giants and Niners. It's not sexy, but they win. They win, and they're tough to play, and they're extremely tough to play in their own building. Ridiculous 18-3-3 record at home.
Yeah.
And I am fearful of St. Louis at this point and seeing how teams can just catch lightning in a bottle and ride it all the way. You know, you sort of hope the Blues have a major stumble soon.
Right.
Because they've been riding high, dude.
The next couple months are a tough part of the season for most teams, and we'll see if St. Louis can keep it up because they have a couple of good teams. Chicago, obviously number one in their division right now, and Detroit, who's only 1 point behind. If St. Louis has to play Chicago and Detroit, you oftentimes see more divisional games later in the year. We'll see if St. Louis can really hold on to it.
Well, let's jump into this road trip. Sharks go 2-1-1. We'll go all the way back to the beginning, dude. We start the road trip in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
Not a fantastic effort by the Sharks, who fell behind early and had to work some magic to even get a point out of that game. And I guess it is a credit to the team to find a way to get a point there,
mm-hmm.
when they really didn't play their best game at all. I was pretty discouraged watching that game, going, God, here we are again.
You right, know? Same thing.
Same thing, playing down to a team that has been struggling so mightily. They're ravaged by injuries. They've finally fallen off the top. I mean, Minnesota's free-falling, almost completely out of the playoff picture soon. You know, they will be, and I don't think they'll ever come back into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you allow a team that can't score to score four goals. In regulation, that's not good, dude. That don't like to see that kind of effort.
No, but like you said, they did manage to turn it around, score too late, and take it into overtime, which I guess is some cause for celebration.
Yeah.
A lot of times you might have seen the Sharks just sort of write it off, you know, okay, we'll look towards the next game. Well, nah, they weren't quite out of it, and I think we saw a bit of that with Chicago, as you said, because they were down 2-0 and in my view, just completely dominated by the Blackhawks in the first 20 minutes of the game. And then they came back and sort of stunned the Hawks by scoring twice in 25 seconds, whatever it was. And all of a sudden, they were back in the game. Unfortunately, Chicago's, I think, was a little bit fresher. Sharks, second half of back-to-back, yada, 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 excuses here and there. But Sharks didn't have an answer for the top line at all. And Kane and Taves and Stahlberg were just kicking everybody's ass all over the ice. And Stahlberg kicked that one in at the end, which would have sort of turned the game into a laugher, but it was respectable.
Yeah, that was probably the most discouraging thing from yesterday's game was, again, just no answers for Kane and Taze. Mm-hmm. Just no answers.
Right.
They just can't seem to stop them, period. And I hate to see that, you know, that still the Sharks just aren't able to slow them down. I mean, they did in the first game of the year when we shut out the Blackhawks. And Niemi certainly deserved a better fate than the 4-3 score that it ended up being, because he made some saves that were just outrageous, especially the one on Patrick Kane that I think will possibly be in a top 10 highlights of saves of the year throughout the whole league. But Corey Crawford at the end of the game, too, came up pretty huge. When I really thought the Sharks might tie it at the end. When they got momentum, the puck would not leave the zone. They just kept punishing the Blackhawks at the end, and Crawford just wouldn't let it in, dude. Stingy. Yep. Stingy. Belfour-like.
And there was some missed defensive assignments. I remember the one goal with... there was one where Demers was caught watching the puck, didn't pick the guy up, and he got two whacks at it, scored. I think that was Shaw's goal. And then we saw Burns... Stahlberg got loose of Burns and just sort of skated past him. So, you know, at least two of those goals, I think it's more on the D than on Niemi, that's for sure. So I'll take it. Certainly Niemi maybe was the Shark with the best performance that night. And we have Winnipeg and Columbus, the two games against teams that aren't doing very well. Winnipeg at the moment is 10th in the East with 45 points. So they're not embarrassing, unlike Columbus, which has 29 points. Now that would definitely put you in the class of embarrassing. They are a full 8 points behind Anaheim, mm-hmm. who is crawled that somehow put together a decent last 10 games or 6-3-1.
they really have.
And they beat Vancouver. But we
got to keep an eye on them, dude. Yeah. I mean, really, if they figure it out and somehow scratch their way back into this, that's That's like a miracle, right?
They have to make up 15 points. I don't see that happening. Well, because you know who's really pulled it out, and maybe we should talk about this a little later, is Los Angeles. The right. Kings have pulled it out. They figured it out or started figuring it out. But Winnipeg and Columbus, sure, it wasn't a dominating performance against either team, but it was enough to win on the road. You sort of take it.
Yeah,
right?
you get Curtis Sanford again. Right. Like, and the guy...
He's better. Curtis Sanford's way better at this point.
I don't think Columbus is looking for a goalie. I think they have one.
In Curtis Sanford?
Well, he looks awesome against the Sharks twice.
Yeah.
I mean, he was not the reason why they lost that game. They just can't score.
No, they just suck.
That team has bigger problems, but that was another one. You worry they're not going to win that game. When Rick Nash scores mm-hmm. and busts up that 0-0 game, going, oh, God, they're going to lose in Columbus.
Yeah.
And they found a way. They found a way to win. You like the resiliency there. The Winnipeg game was a good game in a place that's tough to win against a team that can be really good on home ice, a shutout by Niemi. Not a bad road trip, dude. 5 points out of 8 possible. Now you're at home. You've got a game against Calgary, and you've got a game against Ottawa.
Right.
And then you have to go back to Vancouver. So you hope the Sharks can focus on these two road games and not look too far down the schedule. Things to circle from the road trip, dude, that I think good news is Sharks faced 8 PK situations and killed them all.
Mm-hmm.
They did not allow a power play goal on this road trip. The bad news is they were 2-for-12 on their own power play.
That is too bad because I watched some of the Winnipeg game just recently. We rewatched some of it, and I thought their power play actually looked really good against mm-hmm. Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. I thought there was a good movement, good chances. Unfortunately, I can't remember. Did they score a power play goal in Winnipeg?
I don't think so. I think they got one in Minnesota, and I think they got one last night in Chicago.
I think that's right. But Winnipeg, I thought they looked good. So it's not just everybody standing around at the point,
right?
And waiting for things to happen. So I'll take it. It's not, like you said, it's not great. But right now, I'd rather have the PK outperforming the power play. Just that's really been a problem.
Yeah, that's good news. That's good news. And you have confidence that the power play is going to figure it out mm-hmm. based on the high end talent that you have on that power play. But the PK struggling so mightily for the first half of the season now, and we're past that halfway point actually at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The Sharks having played 42 games. You'd like to see them continue this stretch, and it's pretty important that they kill in the high 80% of the rest of the season if they want to have a legitimate shot at contending for the cup, dude.
Yeah, that's true, dude. Well, it seems like this is a question that we've dealt with was last week or the week before, and now it seems like it may have come to a head with an article by David Pollack, and that's the Ninamaki situation, I think, has gotten a little bit more toasty. It's heated up a little bit. There was an article in the Mercury about how he's not real happy with his station, and who would be? He's not even dressed.
You mean he's nude?
Right.
He sits nude in the press box.
He's sitting in the press box nude. And
well, the Sharks should give him some clothes and stat.
I don't think that's covered by the CBA. But Ninamaki's obviously not playing. He's not even backing up the starting goalie, and he's not happy about it, and why would he be? But it seems like... you know, considering there's stuff from his agent and this, you know, clearly made an article in the newspaper, is this a situation that's going to have to be dealt with, or will the Sharks just tell him to sit down and suck it up?
Oh, I think they'll deal with it in their own time. I mean, they have control over the situation. Well, as long as Havlat's on the shelf, they'll have the room to carry him as long as they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at some point, I don't know. The message seems pretty clear to me that he is the one who is not in their plans
mm-hmm.
based on the fact that they've completely isolated him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not even letting him. Now, if they were letting him dress and sit down there and they gave him one of these Columbus games, then you might be guessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Grice or Nitti?
Right.
Which one do they want? Pretty clearly, they want to keep Grice, and they're looking for someone to take Ninamaki. The other thing that compounds this problem a little bit, dude, is the fact that Alex Stalock is healthy and is going to start playing in Worcester next week.
You mean practicing?
Well, they said he was going to be activated
No kidding.
So he's back. So now Worcester has Sateri.
They have 76 goals.
Sateri, Sexsmith, who both are playing well.
Right.
And now you have Stalock, who last year or 2 years ago was one of the best. He's an AHL All-Star.
Right.
You've got three really good minor league prospect goaltenders. You're going to send down Nittamaki and have a fourth? I just don't see it happening.
Then they can all play bridge together.
So Worcester has a bit of a roster logjam themselves here.
Yeah.
So big time. That aside, the problem is always going to be who wants Nittamaki and his contract. The later this gets, the more likely is someone's going to want him because they're going to have to pay him less money.
Right.
So who'd want him? The rumor is maybe Tampa Bay. But Tampa Bay is so bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, now they're the worst team in the Eastern Conference. They've fallen all the way to a tie with the Islanders.
Yeah.
So if you're them, why do you want to bring in Nittamaki?
You don't. And there's no point in that. There's no point in them adding a goalie at the deadline. They need to add a long-term solution to something. One of their many problems.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's going to be the way Yzerman's going to go. You got to figure... He's gonna deal. He's not gonna buy.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's gonna be getting rid of pieces instead of adding pieces. So a clear landing spot for Nittamaki, as I kind of look up and down the league here.
You see one? Because I don't.
I don't see one at first glance. Not really.
I don't see one at all.
You're kind of waiting to see if someone gets hurt.
I think we're gonna see Nittamaki waived in the next 6 weeks. That's what I think. We're going to see him waived, and he's going to get shipped and shipped again and hope somebody gets claimed. And he may do the re-entry waiver dance that other teams have done. Basically, you waive a guy, you ask around to see if someone will claim him on re-entry, and then you just get him out.
So I'm trying to remember how this works in terms of like a Filatov thing. If you waive him...
Mm-hmm.
And then you allow him to go play overseas.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to pay him, but then he wouldn't count against the cap.
I think that's right.
So they could, and this is what happened with Greiss, actually. They sent him to Germany or wherever he went. It's possible that if Nittamaki clears waivers, which he definitely will, then they'll just tell him to go away.
Right.
You know, and we'll pay you and... See you later, dude. They certainly don't want him in Worcester.
No.
What's the point?
Yeah, play for the Junior Sharks. Play for the Sabercats.
So have we seen, unless there is an injury, knock on card table.
Right.
Have we seen the end of Antero Nittamaki?
Yes.
He's
not going to play another game.
Right.
In a Sharks jersey.
I agree with you.
All right, dude. What other issues do we have here, Sharks-wise? I think we talked about the upcoming road trip.
I think that the other thing I'd like to talk about is the hit on Andrew Desjardins in the Columbus game.
Right.
Which now there's a hearing pending for the player. I think his name is Reeves. Do you remember?
Byers. Yeah.
Some kid who hasn't played many games in the NHL and throws a very clear shoulder to the head of Andrew Desjardins. And he's... out for now.
Dane Byers.
He seems to be okay. I mean, from what he's saying, but they didn't play him in Chicago, which is completely understandable. And we'll have to see if he's going to play against Calgary. I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't, just so that they're being extra careful with him.
Sure.
Especially given, I thought Tommy Wingles was pretty good against Chicago. He scored his first goal. He seemed to kind of be everywhere. The most aggressive and impactful effort I've seen from him.
Yes, me too, by far.
So what do you make of this hit, and does this deserve a suspension?
I think it deserves a suspension purely because how the rules are worded now. It's principal point of contact to the head, all this kind of stuff. So to me, it's a no-brainer. It's just a question of how many games does he get? Is it, you know, he got an intent to injure. Match penalties aren't just thrown out, you know, like freebies in the NHL. You don't see match penalties too often. So clearly the referees thought it was pretty egregious. I would be very surprised to see the NHL not further suspend him for that reason, especially since the match penalty for precisely the kind of thing that the NHL is supposedly trying to cut down on. So I think we'll see 2 or 3 games for this guy. Is it the worst thing I've ever seen? No, but it's exactly the kind of stuff that the NHL is supposedly trying to avoid. So you gotta be consistent to a certain extent. And I already see some stuff about people saying that, you know, Shanahan hasn't been as consistent and all these kinds of things, and they're getting more lax. And it does seem like the suspensions are getting lighter. I mean, the James Wisniewski thing was 8 games to start the season, and we haven't seen anything like that. And I thought maybe that might be close to the standard for these kinds of, you know, bad infractions, but clearly not.
They're looking at past history too, and I think that's where Wisniewski got hammered extra, and same with Andy Sutton. And you know, if this kid does it again, if he got three, next time he'd get 5, and then he'd get 8, and it keeps building. They want to try and cut down on repeat offenders. I'm going to agree. I think three games for this shoulder to the head, and hopefully Desjardins is okay, because he's a pretty important part of what they're doing back there on the fourth line.
Yeah,
and we definitely need him. So hopefully he'll be back sometime this week. I don't have any reason to believe he won't.
Yeah, not as important as Brad Winchester, though. I'm still a Brad Winchester fan, man. I got to tell you.
I have no problem with Brad Winchester. I love that he tried to shove the puck up Crawford's ass last night. right after, who was it, Couture did the same thing. He's just poking at the pads. And then like 2 minutes later, Winchester just does the same thing.
Right.
And then gets in a fight with the old father time, Sean O'Donnell.
Right.
O'Donnell Sean.
Worst Christmas song ever.
Oh my goodness, dude. So we have a few other things to discuss. We did get a tweet about the Montreal Canadiens, dude.
Ultra Gabe, I think it was. Yeah, what did he say, dude?
He said with the rumor in Montreal is that they're gonna start a fire sale.
Right.
And who do we think the Sharks might be interested in if Montreal just starts gutting their team?
Yeah. I looked at the roster. Not. I mean, if we're talking about guys that are actually available.
Okay, right? Well, there's players on their team that are not going to be available. P.K. Subban.
Pacioretty.
Plekanec.
Cole, probably.
Well, you're not interested in Cole at that money. I mean, that's really the thing. Cole's making... Isn't he making like $5 million?
He's making
$5.5 million?
Right.
I mean, that's ridiculous. Now, Scott Gomez, now you're talking. Now I'd want... you know, I mean, no one's
going to... Scott Gomez still hasn't scored this year.
No one's going to take Thomas Cabral. They just re-signed Josh Georges.
Uh-huh.
Dude, tell listeners what you told me about the comment about Josh Georges.
So Josh Georges gets re-signed, right? And we've given Josh Georges heat over the years because the best thing anybody can seem to say about him is he knows how to take a hit. And he signed for $4 million. And I talked to this friend of mine who is a Montreal Canadiens fan. And I asked him about that deal. And I said, $4 million? It seems like an awful lot. I mean... How many points does Josh Georges have? He has 11 points. Okay, so let's say, and that's in over 40 games. So he's going to be a 20-point player for $4 million. Ugh, that seems like too much to me. But it was funny because I was reading about the deal, and I can't remember who said it, but it was either a pundit or a player, and he says he puts his body on the line every single night. And to me, that's exactly the same as saying he knows how to take a hit.
Which is what they were saying about Georges before he got traded.
You're right.
Everything. Josh Georges goes to the corner and sure knows how to take a hit.
How is this any different? I would take Mike Camilleri, though. Maybe Cammy,
gone. We'll get to that in a second.
Right.
The tweet specifically mentioned Kostitsyn. I'm not interested. And I don't think Doug Wilson would be either, as we were talking about before we recorded. Can you think of the last impactful big-name Russian that's been on the Sharks since Larionov and Makarov?
No.
No.
Andrei Zuzin.
And Semenov does not count.
Viktor Kozlov.
Yeah, that's not the flavor of Doug Wilson. And I certainly don't see him changing that up with Kostitsyn. Also mentioned, I think, in the tweet was Yannick Weber. I don't know why we'd be interested in their sixth defenseman. I don't have an interest in him. I got to say that the player that I think I would want off Montreal, dude, is maybe Travis Moen. I mean,
I'm
saying this with a twinge of seriousness because Travis Moen in his first tour of duty with the Sharks was very disappointing.
Yes.
And we were not happy with his effort against the Ducks.
Right.
That was 3 years ago, right? Or 3.5 years ago. Now he's had a lot of distance. That team is not the same team. He is a penalty killer. He's physical. He fights. He can chip in the odd goal. He's got 9 this year. He probably could get to 15, maybe even 18 goals. Travis Mullen, dude, I mean, maybe if there was no bad blood and maybe the Sharks don't feel as poorly about him as we did when he left, that might be possible. Like, that's the player, the type of player that maybe you're interested in getting. They just got Rene Bourque in that Camilleri deal. They're wanting to get bigger.
Rene Bourque, I was looking at Rene Bourque because I know early in his career he was more of a third line type player, but you look at his stats over the past 3 years and he's definitely better than a third line player. No,
he's not a bad player.
Oh, he's a good player. I'm just thinking, you know, is that a guy that you could actually fit into the third line? And the answer is no.
No, no.
you couldn't fit into the third line.
And I don't think they want to keep him. Like, I think they got him to keep him to be their Ryan Clough type player. But Mullen's at the end of a 3-year deal. You know, that's a player who, if they're having a fire sale, that's the type of guy who's going to go. And I don't think it would cost that much to get him. Like, I don't think it would. He plays 15 minutes a night, dude. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. You call me crazy. I know I bashed the hell out of him when he left, but I'm willing to forgive and forget, dude. I still like the idea of Travis Mullen.
Right. Maybe we'd rather have the real deal in, who am I thinking of? The real killer for us against for the Ducks,
Sammy Paulson.
That's the real killer.
Well, the one you'd want in a perfect world is Dave Boland, but that's not going. That's not going to happen.
That ain't happening.
I don't see anyone else on this roster that I like. David Desharnais, but they're not going to trade him. A young player, they're not going to be looking to move him. And the rest of these guys, you know, I'm not interested. Like, I don't think
the only other guy that's even close to what we're looking for is Petteri Nokelainen, who was traded from the
but that guy's the bounced Coyotes around.
He's
more than I'm trying to think of a clever analogy.
He was decent back when he was on the Bruins, I remember, but you know, he's only got 9 minutes a night, less than 9 minutes, and he's -6.
No thanks.
There's not a whole lot of great pickings for the Canadians, but this brings us to the Camilleri trade, which is, I almost wrote a post on it because I was trying to respond to the commenter who wanted more written postings from us this year, dude, as our New Year's resolution, but I promise nothing. I was going to write about how this basically proves that Montreal is a two-bit organization, which I'm happy actually to now spit out here. Because frankly, if you're making personnel decisions based on a player being frustrated at losing, then you are almost by definition a losing mindset organization, in my opinion. What is the difference?
So you're not buying the fact that Feaster and what's the guy?
Pierre Gauthier?
Yeah. So are saying that this trade has been in the works for weeks.
Please. Yeah, it just happens to be a day after he says that stuff to the press.
The classless thing about it is that they pulled him from the game.
Right.
You see that happen sometimes in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember ever hearing about that in a hockey game where a player is in the middle of the game.
In the middle, right.
And all of a sudden, they're just told to go back to the team hotel and await instructions. Like, he's going on some sort of secret spy mission.
Right.
That's ridiculous. That was done to make a point, to basically flip the gigantic French-Canadian middle finger to Camilleri.
Yes.
And say, we're sending you back to the place that you left.
Right.
Enjoy, you know?
But you know what? It's to Calgary's benefit. They got the better end of that deal, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. They get the player who has the potential to have the most value down the road and the guy who has the shorter deal.
Mm-hmm.
But for Calgary, it
doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. Like, I think Jay Feaster is still in that same mindset as they've been in the last 4 years, where they're not good enough to win, but they're not bad enough to get a top 10 pick.
Right.
So here they are again. They've said they're going to try and go for the playoffs again. Well, good luck when you finish 10th and you don't make it. And here you are again. You've got, you know, you're picking in the mid-teens.
Right.
And you're just not a very good hockey team.
Right.
Now, they will have Camilleri next year as a trade chip with 1 year left on his contract. And maybe they felt like they needed to get rid of Bork. He has 4 years left. I mean, that's a lot of cash.
Trade the long-term deal. But yeah. I just can't believe how... I mean, to me, this is just a stupid move by Montreal. I don't understand trading a player just purely to spite him and to show to him and the fan base that, I don't know, that you're still the big boss, that you still have the biggest stick. It's stupid.
Yeah.
It's just stupid.
Especially when the word is that he was misquoted.
Right.
Like, he said, that's not what I said.
And he just bought a house in Montreal. It's not like this guy is like it's not like he was some sort of, you know, guy that doesn't try.
Well, that definitely doesn't matter. You know, they don't care about stuff like that. Because remember, Dan Boyle, like, built a house in Tampa Bay.
Right.
He signs a long-term deal, and new ownership comes in, and they treat him like a sack of garbage. Like,
but that's Tampa Bay. This is different.
It's the same general principle, though.
It is the same principle, and it's sad to think that, you know, this is supposed to be sort of the center of the hockey universe.
Right.
And Montreal is making decisions not on what's best for the team, not on what will put the best team on the ice to win, but will make the GM feel like a big guy. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, that's essentially what this deal is. Okay, you can't... It may actually be true that there is a... I mean, forget the fact that what he said may actually have been true, that they have a mindset of losing, which can happen on professional teams. It's not like that's unheard of. I mean, it could be... It's unfortunate maybe that he said it in a press and you know, people don't like it, but it may actually be true what he said. Who knows?
Yeah, I think... When you say the two names, you think this deal is lopsided, but it's really not that lopsided, dude.
Really?
You look at the results. I think someone said that in the last 3 years that Bork's actually outscored Camilleri. I mean, Camilleri's been pretty disappointing. The guy's making $6 million. He's got 23 points. I mean, why aren't we talking about him in the same breath as like a Heatley? Like, how are they really that different? The Camilleri is a great name, but... You know, he's 3 years removed from that 82-point season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has the potential. He still is not old. He's 29.
Mm-hmm.
This is a boom or bust thing. And I think Montreal's deal is a little more conservative. They know that Bork is going to be a mid-20 goal scorer and a big body. Camilleri with Iginla could get back to 70, 80 points.
Right.
Or... He could be on pace for 46, which is what he is right now. So
he's got a much bigger upside than Rene Bork, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely true.
And I think that Montreal could use a more of a guy like that because they don't really seem to have, at least in my opinion, they don't have a big high-flying scorer. Pacioretty is pretty good, but you don't see any of the guys on Montreal right now and you think, oh, you know, I could see that guy scoring 35 or 40 goals. Eric Cole's on pace technically for in the mid 30s, but nobody else is really on pace for more than 30, except for maybe Pacioretty might
that
sniff
team,
it.
That team, they have problems.
So to get rid of the guy, really the only legitimate guy, I mean, maybe not this year because he's only got 9 goals, but he could get hot and go for 30.
Well, you see how he did in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like he was huge for them in the playoffs the last 2 years. So, and especially in that run that they took all the way to the conference finals
mm-hmm.
when they were playing with Halak.
I just don't understand that move by Montreal. I don't understand the move for Calgary.
Yeah.
Not to make it any better, but it's just one of those things.
It's entertaining.
It's entertaining.
Have the trade floodgates opened here, dude?
I don't think they're
think
open
that,
yet.
You don't think not yet?
Nah, not quite yet. We still got some... We still got some time yet. I think we got another month before everything's going to open.
All right.
Dude, we got a... an email from Sayor, who's breaking down our season-long bet of who's going to win the cup.
All right, this is a few days old, so things have changed. I have the updated standings from today.
Oh wow! So anyway, per our drafts, where each Doug and I went back and forth and drafted all the teams in the NHL save one, which turned out actually to be Florida, funny enough, and not the Sharks. And whoever drafted the team that wins the cup gets a trip to Vegas. Okay, that's the backstory. So Sayor gives us a point placement, and I have 204 points and Doug has 221. So that means Doug is a little bit ahead of me. Oh wait, does that mean I'm ahead? I can't wait. Point per placement.
I think you want to have the lower points.
Okay, so I'm a little bit ahead right now, and on average I'm off by 7.78 positions, and Doug was off by 6.57 positions. So it looks like you may have drafted a little bit better, but I'm still doing better.
Okay.
So I might be in slightly better position, but I like the way this is going up. We talked about this in past weeks, how we both have very good teams at the top, and so this is clearly going to go right to the end, at least until all of your teams lose in the first round.
The thing that's interesting is in the Western Conference, as it goes right now, I have five teams and you have two. Mm. And one of your teams is Minnesota. So you've pushed all your chips on Chicago.
Yeah.
And I have Vancouver, LA, Nashville, Detroit. Wait, no, we're missing a team here. I'm sorry. You have a team somewhere mixed in there. Who's okay. The other playoff? Oh, St. Louis.
Yeah.
And you have St. Louis. So St. Louis. You've got three and I've got four. Well, okay. How about that for math? And then
in the East, I'm doing right.
East, you're doing good. I mean,
you have New York, but I have Boston.
I have New York. You have Boston. Washington's back in the thick. I mean, you have Philly. I mean, you're in a way better spot than I am, and because Pittsburgh is in trouble, you know. So you're looking pretty good in the Eastern Conference right now. I've kind of got everything locked in with the Rangers. I'm riding the Rangers, but that wouldn't be too shocking, actually, if they came out on top over there. We'll see what happens.
I can't believe you're going to root for Vancouver.
I'm not. There, I don't want to. Dude, I don't want to root for Vancouver.
You shouldn't have drafted him, dude. Should have let him drop
what
to 20.
What do you say? You want to root for the Blackhawks? What do you say? You like Patrick Kane?
No, I don't like Patrick Kane.
Yeah, see?
But well, I can root for Dave Boland.
Enough, dude. All
Enough. Right, dude. Let's look at the schedule. We talked about it. We got...
Calgary's coming up... on Tuesday night.
Calgary, Ottawa, and Vancouver this week. So two playoff teams in Calgary. So I'd like to see 4 points here. I'd like to see a win in Vancouver. That would be... I almost don't care about the other two games. I just want to see a win in Vancouver. Yeah, I'd trade 2 points for four.
This is the last time we play Vancouver until the playoffs. So it's a pretty important statement game. I think that's the NBC game, even, it looks like, but based on the starting time. So, yeah, you got to make a statement against Vancouver. I'm curious to see what Ottawa's all about. I don't quite understand how they're winning.
Right.
But
Alfredson's having a good year. Mahalik's having a good year.
We'll see them. And Calgary, you got to beat Calgary. They're just not that good, dude.
They're just really not very good at all.
No.
All right, dude. Well, I hope another good week for the Sharks here, dude, and I will talk to you next week.
I'm sorry, dude. I hate to cut you off.
Yes?
But I know that we forgot to talk about something.
What?
Logan Couture is the only Sharks All-Star.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about
that. How could we forget this?
I don't know. Maybe it happened so close to last podcast.
It did.
We missed it.
Well, just really quickly.
He's the young guy. He's a Calder finalist, and he has got the most goals, equals All-Star.
And McClellan is coaching the All-Star team as well, so... A lot of people making some noise this week. Why not Thornton? Why not Marlowe? Well, the word is that some of these guys, the ones that are getting the press for it are Solani and Lidstrom,
right.
Said,
no, thanks.
No, thank you. Don't even bother wasting the spot on us. We're not coming. So then just invite someone else. And I read that Thornton and Marlowe were part of that conversation.
Oh, really?
Possibly. That they may have been two players that very quietly said,
Maybe not.
Mm-hmm. And that might be why Couture gets the nod. You got to think that's possibly the case.
Sure.
You're not going to see a normal circumstance where they're not going to pick Joe Thornton. Like,
yeah,
they took players on that have that name that are not having great years.
Right.
Ovechkin.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
They're taking Ovechkin and they're taking... I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen Solani's numbers, dude. Are Solani's numbers great?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
I mean, Jumbo, the top center on the best team by win percentage in the Western Conference, and you don't take him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't pick him, just even based on reputation. He's the only player with stuff in the NHL store in New York, for God's sake.
It's true.
Like, he's the most marketable Sharks player. He'd be the guy you pick. When he says no, you go to Couture.
It would have been nice to see Vlasic, actually, because I know Andy Bench, who writes for, I'm not sure who anymore, Inside Hockey or something, said that he's got better points and stats in all cases than Dan Girardi, who's in the All-Star game. And as we've talked about, I don't know, there may not be too many players in the NHL that plays tougher minutes than Mark Edvard Vlasic. So he's having a monster year. He's playing great. It would be nice to see him recognized. To be perfectly honest, it's probably better for the Sharks long term if these players aren't recognized because that means we're in better contract position.
Let them rest.
Yeah.
Let them rest.
And he can take the weekend off.
Yeah, certainly not broken up about it, but that's just a little bit of a light explanation. As and there's certainly there's been no confirmed report like Lidstrom and Solani that's what happened. But I do remember reading that somewhere, and if I find it, I'll post it on the blog that their names were kind of thrown in there.
I saw some on Puck Daddy about it, yeah. I think, so you can look at that. But I like the skills competition anyway more than the actual game.
I hardly even watch
the game. I don't care. I really don't care about All-Star.
Why should snubs. They? Dude, should they even have it?
I mean, yeah, it's fun.
How about having it after the season, like the NFL?
Well, then people care even less. I mean, because like the Pro Bowl, like no one even cares. I mean, the season's over. Yeah, why would you ever watch that?
But now you're starting to see. You saw this with the MLB this year, where a lot of the players just said no,
mm-hmm.
didn't go. Now we're starting to see with the NHL. Like,
yeah.
So it's just going to keep getting worse, dude.
Could. I mean, I could be convinced that you should do away with the whole game. But I mean, the fact that I think players should be recognized each season as All-Stars. I guess if you don't want to play the game, I guess it's okay. Keep the skills competition, though. I want to see someone doff a funny hat and go on a breakaway. Ooh. But I'll take it.
All right.
All right, dude. Bye.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.